Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies. Growth is something that most consulting firms want to achieve, and some do it better than others. To find out why, Hinge Marketing prepares its annual high growth study, which looks at both the broader strategies and narrow tactics to differentiate high growth firms. This year's study includes nearly 1,300 consulting firms, of which about 360 are engineering firms. You can find a link to download the free executive summary of the study in the episode description. To talk with us about the study is Carl Feldman, a partner at Hinge Marketing. So to jump right into it, in the study, mid-sized firms, those with revenues between $5 million and $49.9 million, were more likely to be in the high growth category, which the study defines as a 20% annual growth rate, than so-called micro firms, those with revenues of less than $1 million. And that feels counterintuitive to me, but why is that so?
You know, it's interesting. And that's not always the case. You know, we've been doing this study for some time, and there have been past years where that metric has been inverse. I would recommend taking this trend specifically with a little bit of, you know, it's a grain of salt, because the research terminology is that this is a purpose of sample. So we specifically in this study oversample and lean towards mid, large size firms for more practical insights. What we find at the micro level after years of doing this is there are very wide oscillations. So it's basically at that size, and I just say this bluntly, you either grow or die out. So it's really your needle. There are some in between, but often they're on the extreme. So that's why we see some variation in the micro size. We would take more of our insights from the mid size, and even looking at the micro firms, they can take more of the practical insights by setting their targets at that mid size, because that is aspirational to where they want to be. And as you move up the chain into that large and enterprise side, some of those insights may be a little bit different because you just have an amount of scale there.
Well, another thing that sort of jumped out at me about the high growth firms was that you have a high profit category, which is firms that earn 25% or greater profit. And high growth firms are more than 70% more likely to bring that profit to the bottom, to bring their growth to the bottom line. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I would think that a firm that is growing is investing in itself and not bringing the money to the bottom line. Why is this the case?
That's an interesting, and I appreciate you bringing that question out. It's one that, you know, unlike the micro firms, which kind of oscillate, this is a pretty consistent trend over the last 5-10 years. And we'll share some of the grains in the full study. And as you dig a little deeper into this, it may seem counterintuitive, but the big takeaway is that these high growth firms have a methodology. It's a considered approach to marketing and business development that at its core, it is more efficient. So that allows, when you have a significant pipeline, and you are paying attention to business intelligence and probably listening to your research and focusing on the areas that are really growing for our industry, if you have a healthy pipeline, you're able to pick and choose the best type of work. So not just quantity of new opportunities, but also quality. And that really helps to drive the efficiency and profit line. The other side, and we see this in other areas of the report, consistently, the high growth, the faster growing firms are focused on efficiency technology. So automation technology, whether that's technology in the form of partners or back office or PM efficiency, or even, you know, digital environment information that's more ready to use, takes less legwork to get into a usable format. Those types of things also enhance the bottom line. So
some of that, the approach and methodology, and you know, it's a term that's thrown around very widely, but the culture and operational discipline that goes with that kind of methodical approach, that's really what drives that efficiency. So it's not surprising to us. We've seen it year after year after year. Now the gulf has increased, right? I think in the last year, we've seen that difference, the variance increase. So we're seeing more of it, and that could be a nature of the external environment and what's happening. So that the firms are leaning into this, those trends all accelerated. So if they were already leaning into it, you increase your lead. It's also that this technology, it compounds. So the efficiencies and gains can build, you know, they can build on one another, so that we see that as a factor as well.
One point off that, which sort of jumped out at me from the course of all the questions in the study, and I'm not sure exactly how to put this politely. It just seems like the faster growth firms have better employees. Like right down the line, it was always they were more involved in strategy, more involved in technology. Is that a case?
Yeah, it is. Looking at it broadly, we would say definitively yes. There is that investment in that skill set, the types of skills that are needed to do that kind of business development, to be able to take complex solutions and explain that clearly. It's also, and across all these questions, we're seeing like this all connects back together. The kinds of methodologies that you would use in business development, marketing, building thought leadership, and establishing your expertise in a more visible way, those things are also really good for attracting the best talent. So if you think about, you know, we've done specifics of different studies, but we did studies on employer branding. You know, how are our brands perceived in AEC, you know, as an employer? And a lot of the things that were most important to that, you know, the most sought after mid-level leadership recruits, how can I build my brand, my personal brand? How can I be involved in the issues that are most relevant to my industry? Those things are all consistent with the types of methodical business development and marketing strategies that we see indicated through the studies and that we've worked on for years. It's really just reflecting back on the year. There wasn't that much that was really new. It was like you took the trend and just, you know, pressed the accelerator pedal.
Right, and it sort of the difficult market sort of just accentuated the differences. Right.
Yeah. And you know, the cracks and strains on one side of the spectrum are the opportunities for the other. I mean, I'll share our own, you know, ourselves as guinea pigs, as Hinge. We are also professional services. So a lot of the same challenges when the pandemic started, because we were already leaning into this trend, we had a momentary pause as people evaluated and then a quick lift. So we were able to acquire talent that would have been very difficult in the past, you know, hiring high-level research analysts from, you know, Hilton Hospitality. That it's a little bit different in terms of shift and audiences, but you know, one industry's pause is another industry's opportunity, and that rings true across our industry and disciplines.
One other trend, I spoke a couple weeks ago with Mick Morrissey of Morrissey Goodale on M&A. In your study, M&A did not play that big a role in the growth of the various firms. It was almost, I have the numbers here, that high growth firms were twice as likely to be involved in M&A, but the impact of the bottom line is less than you would have expected. Only 8% of high growth firms get the majority of their growth from mergers and acquisitions, and less than 20% of overall growth can be attributed to M&A. Did that surprise you?
No.
No?
No. And I'll tell you why. It's on one hand, it's absolutely, it's almost, it is pervasive in our industry. I mean, there's a lot of things driving it, from succession planning, generational, and just everything in the market, the consolidation, lots of strong fundamentals that we think are going to continue driving that. The dropping down, to the growth overall, I think that the big takeaway when you look at that overall is that it's not easy. It's not easy to integrate brands. It's one thing to purchase a firm, to acquire a firm or merge entities. And we may have even done our legwork strategically, make sure that cultures are aligned and those types of things. But to really realize the collective strength and, you know, 1+1=3, that also takes a methodical approach. And, you know, I'll share, not to toot our horn, but a lot of our involvement in this space is helping firms come up with that brand integration, first the equity assessment, and then the integration plan. So it becomes a repeatable process of one, cultural alignment and making sure that you're retaining all of the best talent, and also creating clarity for the external audiences that if it's left to its own devices, it creates confusion. So it's not surprising to us at all that you don't see that drop right down to growth. There are steps in between to do it well. And, you know, the firms that there, when you dig into the grains of firms that do it well, they do experience faster growth, better efficiency, because they have that work plan. So they can accurately predict how long will it take to realize, you know, fuller value from this acquisition. You know, you think of like the Stantec of the world, there is a process involved in that. And you can also think of some recent examples in industry where maybe it didn't go as smoothly as firms might have expected, or that wasn't the objective, and that can result in, you know, talent looking for new homes, or you may be washing out some of the, you know, that equity that you purchased, and that may or may not be a primary objective. But you know, it's important to go into these things as much as possible with a plan, and then once it happens, I think the hopeful news is it's not too late. You know, there are a lot of firms that they do all of their due diligence and strategic acquisition and complementing teams and, you know, growth potential, cultural alignment. They spend time naturally on those things. And then you can come back and do the full integration. But it's important to keep that in mind.
Would it be fair to say then that the firms that do it well, they do the merger in year one, but they start to see the benefits in year three and four?
Or exactly.
It's down exactly. The line. And at that point, it's, you don't really know where it's from.
That's right. Well, the firms that are taking a methodical approach, they usually do know where it's from. Right. They're doing that, that analytics and have the intelligence to know. And some acquisitions realize growth and efficiency faster than others. It depends. And then there are, you know, all types of ownership and legality and how these things are reported. So that's a factor as well. Excuse me.
One of the big differences between the high growth firms and the other firms was, especially in this past year, was that the high growth firms spent a lot more money on marketing as a percentage of the revenue.
Yeah.
And you know, typically in a difficult market, the first thing they cut is consultants, and then the next thing they cut is marketing. In this case, they did the exact opposite. Why were the high growth firms moving in this direction?
Yeah. Jerry, well, question, does that surprise you? Surprising?
It's not surprising. I mean, it's the smart thing to do, but it's the difficult thing to do.
Yeah, it's I would say largely it implies the confidence that these firms are going to market with. They have a plan, they can see where their trajectory is headed, and they know that there's wind in their sails. You know, it is, Again, I'll share us as the guinea pig, right? When, you know, those first couple months, yes, sure. In the back of your mind, you're thinking, is this time to step on the pedal? There's a lot of uncertainty out there. However, all of our analytics, everything going says, okay, we need to prepare, because as we know very well in our industry, it's one thing you get the work, but then who's going to do it? How do you build, and how do you tie these pipelines together for, you know, the quality work, and then also the quality teams to deliver that? They have to go hand in hand. And, you know, I think these firms that are reporting increased spend, they've already done the legwork. They already have those funnels in place. So it's not like it dried up and stopped. It's accelerated on both fronts. They have opportunities for talent upgrade. They have opportunities to increase market share and growth, and they're not going to sit on the sidelines and wait to see what happens.
Yeah, that's one of the strange thing about the past year was, overall, the engineering industry had negative growth, but for a significant share of firms, it was their best year ever.
Right. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
How crazy is that? That's it is a topsy-turvy world, but I have to say, I mean, it rewards those that have been, you know, keeping their finger on the pulse and watching. It's not an easy thing to do. And it, in some sense, you're never able to predict, you know, what's going to happen, but are you in the right position?
You know, we have, and are you willing like to take the chance?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have health and engineering firms that we work with that, you know, they did what was consistent for their positioning and their expertise and those things. And it happened to be right at the nexus of a global pandemic. And so then it became a question of, wow, how quickly can we get on deck, right? And that's a different challenge. It's still a challenge, but, you know, that the that positioning didn't happen during the pandemic. It happened well before in the years leading up to it.
That's an excellent point, yeah. One thing that did happen in the pandemic is that we all had to move to sort of the virtual marketing. Face-to-face marketing went away, right, as we're doing right now. And as we go back to whatever normal might be, what do you see as the balance between the digital marketing and the face-to-face? Do you see face-to-face coming back to a large degree, degree?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we are human. I can speak personally. I miss seeing people in person. Certainly that will come back. However, it's not going to go back to the same way it was. When I was sharing the acceleration of trends, this is one that's absolutely going to stick. I mean, it's almost, I'll use the real world analogy, and Jerry, I don't know if this applies to you, but the grocery shopping. How many of us have now taken the plunge into online ordering for grocery shopping?
Right.
Something that had a high level of resistance and it's weird, and, you know, I want to go squeeze my fruit. You know, it is, it's a different world now. So now we have whole audiences that have become comfortable with these technologies. C-suite that were highly resistant to, oh, well, nobody really talks on LinkedIn. Who really reads these emails? Well, now after doing it, they realize, wow, okay, this is real. Real connections are happening here. Yeah, there is a bit of, you know, the momentum that critical mass achieved. There's more happening there. Same thing applies. Those that have had a foundation before were able to cut through the clutter quicker. But largely, it's going to, it will come back some. So it's not like your real life experience just disappears into nothing and we live in a digital box for the rest of our lives. But the trends that were identified, this remote technology and virtual conferences, they're here to stay. They will be in some format. You know, it's a, I think back in my personal experience before even getting into full professional services, I have a lot of friends at Herman Miller, you know, the office, right, office furniture, and they have been, I mean, it's been very healthy with home office build out and all of that, but fascinating studies and analytics on what does the work environment and office look like on the other side of this, right? And it will be more flexible. It's almost certainly the case that there will be more of a combination, more hybrid capabilities, and that connects back to that conversation we're having about technology. You know, what elements are more efficient to do this way, and then what things are not? Because there are definitely things that are not, that are you know, better face-to-face and hand-to-hand, but now we've kind of seen the other side of the spectrum, so there's a balance in between that we'll naturally get to.
Yeah, in the study, the high-growth firms were much more likely to be researching and have concerns about remote work than other firms, as they are looking ahead and saying this is something we're going to stick with to some degree.
Did you also catch there was an interesting correlation of data between the willingness to embrace remote work and also the possibility of downsizing and also the possibility of increasing compensation cost?
Right, yeah.
So that tells you, okay, we're going to take best advantage potentially of remote environment to scale to, you know, geographically independent services, hybrid services, perfect. And we may take this opportunity to right size and upgrade our talent. You know, it's the, you look at it, I mean, take the human factor out of it, but if we're able to shrink the team, but increase the level of expertise, increase billing rate, that again just feeds right down to the margin, quality of work.
And your point earlier, those people are available at this point because of the firms that didn't do well. So
that's right.
So another one of the big differences that jumped out was research, that the high growth firms are much more likely. I think it was 82% of high growth firms conduct market research. And I didn't write this down, but I think it was like 60% do it on a quarterly basis. Is this a case of the chicken or the egg? Are the high growth firms more likely to do research, or are firms more likely to do research high growth?
It's the chicken and the egg. Okay. It just depends where you start. It is, this is one, Jerry, that is a consistent benchmark. So this has been going back, you know, 10 years plus, and in its exact current configuration, at least the last 6 years, this has been consistent. And you can take this very clearly as those firms that have invested in understanding their audience in an objective and methodical way have an advantage. And we get into grains of what types of research, but this is looking at broadly. So this could include client experience research, brand perception, service demand, all different types, and across A, E, and C. Pretty consistently, that is a hallmark of the faster growth because it implies a greater understanding and thereby better targeting, more responsiveness to things that firms may miss, right? There's always, that's the thing I find, you know, fascinating, satisfying, challenging, and an opportunity for professional services is it's predicated on the irrational behavior of people. I mean, It is at its core, it's that. So in order to, it's one thing if I were sitting in front of you or like right now, we're having a conversation, I can see how you react. I can tell what's interesting or, you know, if your eyes start glazing over. How does a website do that? How does a website respond if someone's disinterested other than it just sits there while the user leaves?
Right.
So in order to have that kind of connection through some of these, you know, kind of one step removed technologies or tools that have massive reach but are not people, you have to break down the understanding into an objective, quantifiable measure. It's one of the things when I first joined Hinge, one of the most intriguing things is that we had a behavioral scientist on deck. You know, that we had kind of this
backbone of trying to make sense of, you know, people's behavior, feelings, right? Culture, those less quantifiable things, but qualitatively, what does that mean? What's important overall, like the trends we've been talking about that are market positioning that can really be a good context for what we may do individually. But in each case, every firm we speak to, there are differences in the audience and in the teams that serve the audience. So finding that connection between the two, that's the fun of it. That's kind of where you're after. So this is really, it's reflecting that relationship between understanding and a methodical approach and what that results in. But it can feed. I mean, the most exciting thing is when we see these firms not only doing research, but beginning to share that research as educational content. So I mentioned like some of the environmental engineering firms, how valuable is quantifiable data on things like, you know, COVID testing or impact to remote workplace, or even, you know, cost to maintain remote workforce versus in the field and, you know, dealing with safety precautions in the office. How valuable is that kind of certainty right now?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty relevant.
To close up, to cycle back to the beginning, when we were talking about the various sizes of firms, sort of the theme throughout this has been that the firms that have a methodology, have thought the process out, tend to be higher growth firms. A small firm, a micro firm, less than $1 million a year, what can they do to put themselves on this track?
Act like a bigger firm. Look to the mid-sized firms and consider what skill gaps, technologies, infrastructure you need to close to set yourself up to scale. Because I'll tell you, I mean, it's David and Goliath, right? The Goliaths look at the Davids and think, gosh, I would kill to be so nimble, be able to put my finger on that button and scale quickly with minimal fuss and bureaucracy and, you know, trying to wade through mountains of data and content. And, you know, the Davids look at the Goliaths and think, God, where am I going to find the resources to do anything like that, or even a mid-sized firm? And so it is all down to the methodology employed. And are you able to muster that infrastructure that's going to allow you to scale, right? And what pieces are the most important priority for you? It is one thing to say, oh, I want to do all these things. That's almost never the right answer. It's what are the priorities? What are the foundation elements that I have to build on? What things do I need to invest in that are critically missing? Because it is really a system. You know, how are we generating visibility? How are we building trust and engagement? And then what opportunities are we giving audiences to raise their hand and say, I want to work for you or with you? You know, how do we make sure that we're hitting all of those things together? You know, we share a lot of free content around that. That's, I think, helpful in those beginning phases is where do we direct? But really you can take some of the context, but apply it with discipline to your own situation, looking at those mid-sized firms, because that's the trajectory that you want to set yourself up for.
But from what I hear you say, the first step is to do a self-appraisal and see what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and move on from there.
Absolutely. And the high growth executive study is a great place to start. It's not instructive. It's not just do these things. It is context and apply it in a disciplined way to your own audiences, both for recruiting and for new work. You know, if you have the ability to bring in experts to help you with that, great. If not, by doing some secondary research and setting yourself up and looking at it with a critical eye and thinking about your specific scenario, both internal and external. How do you match up? That is what I'd recommend.
Well, as I mentioned, there's a link to download the free executive summary to the study in the episode description, and you can also buy the entire study from Hinge. Well, that's it for today. We've been talking with Carl Feldman, a partner at Hinge Marketing. Thanks so much for taking the time.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. It's always a pleasure.
And this
has been talk about this stuff all day.
I can tell. This has been the Engineering Influence Podcast presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies. Thanks for listening.